UNICEF has just published an assessment of the impact of the Syrian conflict on schools. I'm joined by Simon Ingram from UNICEF's regional office in Amman. Simon, can you give us an overview of what the assessment found?
Well, I think what this assessment shows in very graphic form is just one aspect of the damage, the very serious damage that's being done actually to the fabric of Syrian society. What we're seeing is essentially across the board, across the country, though of course more in some areas than others, that schools and school children are bearing a huge proportion of the damage caused by the conflict, which is ongoing, which is nearly 2 years old now, and the crisis at least is now 2 years old. Just to give you a couple of examples, we're talking about, according to the assessment that we did, and this was back in December, and the figures have surely escalated since then, but in December we were finding something like 2,400 schools had either been damaged or destroyed in fighting, and more than 1,500 other schools are being been taken over as shelters for displaced persons, meaning that all of the children who would normally be taking classes there can no longer do so. So this is putting a huge number of children, hundreds of thousands at least, possibly quite a lot more, out of school, out of an education, and this is a terrible blow to the to Syrian society.
As you point out, these are slightly dated, these figures. Any more recent indications of more recent statistics?
Well, the latest figures that we've received from the Ministry of Education, they have increased the number of schools that they say have been damaged one way or another to nearly 2,500. And the number of schools being used as shelters, that number is up at nearly 1,900. And they're also saying that something like 148 teachers and other staff from schools across the country have been killed in the fighting. So what we're seeing as the crisis develops, as the fighting escalates, we're seeing ever more serious damage being done to the education system, a system which, by the way, was something of had achieved a great deal in terms of delivering, at least on primary education for boys and girls across the country before the crisis. Those gains are now very much being lost steadily.
You talk about hundreds of thousands of children. Is it sort of approaching a kind of whole generation now of children that's going to be caught up in this?
I think we are almost talking in these terms. It is not an exaggeration to say that we are looking, as we see this enormous number of children who are being deprived of an education, some of them for the full 2 years that the crisis has been unfolding, we are looking at a generational loss of quality, of understanding, and of course one of the basic building blocks on which a new Syria will have to be built in the long run. That is being eroded, is being eaten away the longer the conflict goes on.
UNICEF says it needs $20 million to carry on its work in Syria just for this half of the year, and it's received only 15% of that. Were you expecting more when in Kuwait donor countries pledged something like $1.5 billion?
Yes, we're very much hoping that that the donors will come forward as quickly as possible to fill this alarming gap in our funding, which extends not only in the field of education, but across all the other areas that we're working in Syria, water and sanitation, child protection, etc. So we are discussing with the donors urgent conversations that are going on with those that pledged some very substantial amounts of money, some of the Gulf countries, for example, back in January in Kuwait. We're discussing with them how those funds could be applied, and we believe that the education sector, given its importance in terms of maintaining the social development of Syria, we believe that this is one of the priority areas to which donors should, and we dearly hope will, be delivering their funding in the very shortest possible time.
When those pledges were made, were you expecting more by now?
I think it's fair to say that there is a general sense of disappointment in the humanitarian community, of which UNICEF is part. The pledges were fantastic. They were hugely applauded at the time, but of course the proof is in the actual delivery of the assistance, and we are painfully aware of the gaps in our response on the ground, partly because of the problems of access to areas where the conflict is ongoing, but also because we simply cannot scale up the response in accordance to the needs, which are growing all the time. So, yes, we're disappointed, but we're also hopeful that the donors will come forward, that these conversations will be successful.
What explains the delay?
I think that there are questions that need to be asked, and rightly so. There have been debates, clearly, about the extent of the effectiveness of the aid mission as it's going on. And I think that it's correct that people with the donors do want to make the best investment possible for the Syrian people. I think that is right. But I think what they will learn, what they are understanding, is that the UN remains best placed to deliver aid in the most effective way possible in as many parts of the country as possible.
You mentioned the difficulty of access. What efforts is UNICEF doing to reach rebel-controlled areas of Syria?
Well, what we're doing is we're expanding as fast as we can what we call cross-line activities, which basically involves taking supplies and services from the parts of the country which are under the control of the government into those that are controlled by the opposition. We've seen some progress in this regard in recent weeks. Convoys that have reached right up close to areas of the Turkish border, which had not been reached before. So we're looking to build on those successes through negotiations with the different parties, and also critically through expanding the network of partners who we work with to actually deliver the goods and services on the ground. So we are cautiously optimistic that we're moving forward on that front, but unless we get the funding, it would be very difficult to scale up those interventions in the way that we need to.
You say all the parties are involved in those negotiations. Does that include rebel soldiers?
See, what I is that discussions are going on with all of those who we need to talk to. And not only at the level of UNICEF, but across the UN. This is a joint United Nations undertaking. We work together, we coordinate with our different partners. And so the interlocutors are selected on the basis of which they are able to provide the access that we need.
The number of Syrian refugees fleeing the conflict is set to hit 1 million this week. Your thoughts on that, reaching that milestone?
Well, it's a very grim milestone, and one which we always hoped would never be reached, and certainly didn't believe, certainly even 6 months ago, that it would be reached so quickly. What it speaks to is the way in which the situation has deteriorated, and the steady escalation in numbers fleeing the country as people seek sanctuary outside the country's borders. The operation to provide the basic needs and requirements in terms of services for this growing swell of humanity coming across the different borders is a huge task in its own right, and one which has again stretched the capacity of the humanitarian community to extraordinary levels. I think that what we're seeing, however, is that it's a challenge which we are so far just about keeping pace with. But again, it does come back to the issue of funding. Unless the money that is so desperately needed, that was part of the appeal that was made in December, the joint UN appeal made for $1.5 billion, of which $1 billion was for the refugees, unless that money starts coming forward very rapidly, then you're going to start to see even some of the services which are in place in refugee camps and host communities in Jordan, in Lebanon, and in Iraq as well, you're going to see those services will have to be cut back because they simply cannot be maintained without the funding becoming available. And that's something we, of course, we are desperately anxious to avoid.
Okay, Simon. Thanks so much for your time.